Make it your summer at Harper College in Palatine, Illinois. If you're home for summer break, get some classes out of the way. Transfer your summer credit back to DePaul and reach your degree faster. Choose from in-demand intro classes in stats, social sciences, math, English, and more. Plus, hundreds of online classes are available. Summer sessions start June 4th. For a list of popular DePaul transfer courses, visit harpercollege.edu/summerDePaul.
Good morning, Scrawl Nation. Today is Friday, and this is Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. You're listening to Scrawl Radio, hurried but well-considered thoughts about peer writing, tutoring, and the writing process, brought to you by the University Center for Writing-Based Learning, a.k.a. the UQBL. I'm your host, Emily G., joined by my co-host, Gia Z. How are you doing, Gia?
I'm doing so good.
Great.
We also have Kristen V. How are you, Kristen?
Hello, world. I'm Kristen.
And we are joined by our lovely guest, sort of the original host of Scrawl, Mark L. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing well.
Great.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
How did that feel?
Down memory lane, to be honest.
How did the intro feel?
Fantastic. It was great to hear Morgan Hainer's voice again.
Wow.
Yes. Sing the little jingle.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, today we're going to be talking about a couple things. We're going to be talking about cross-culturalism, multilingual writing. Essentially, we're going to be talking about writing with people who use other languages.
We love it.
Yeah. So, Gia, would you kind of like to talk about what cross-culturalism is?
Yeah, of course. So, cross-culturalism is basically anytime you have someone from a different culture than your own using multiple cultures into one thing. So for example, in music, if people use different languages or different, cultural musical influences in one song, cross-culturalism.
Yes.
Translations, which we'll get into, with literature, cross-culturalism. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Cross-culturalism. Yeah. It is what it sounds like. Cross-cultural.
That felt like very spelling bee-like.
Yeah.
You can spell it, too.
You can spell it. And Mark actually is the head of the Writing Center's CMWR team, which works with all of our international writers, which is kind of the UQBL's way of showing that we like to engage in cross-culturalism. Mark, would you like to talk a little bit about kind of what you guys do there?
Happily. So the CMWR, the Collaborative for Multilingual Writing and Research. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to say CMWR.
Yeah.
Our goal is to...
We love acronyms.
We do. Academics love to acronyze
they do.
Anything.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, so the CMWR, our primary goal is to support our tutors and the work that the University Center for Writing-Based Learning does with English as additional language learners, so international students especially, but also supporting those students as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we offer different workshops. We collaborate with a lot of the other programs and initiatives around DePaul, like International Student and Scholar Services, to, I guess, engage in that cross-cultural communication or cross-culturalism.
Cross-culturalism.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Mark,
yeah.
Mark, what about the Writing Center program, the CMWR program, makes it different from the other, types of groups on campus that look to help students from
international
all over?
Yeah.
Well, one thing is, I guess, the removal from any sort of formal program and department connected with that. So a lot of the events and things that we work with are done through International Student and Scholar Services, a really great program. and they are like formally connected to supporting international students. So the great thing about our programming is that we are taking more of a like writing focus to things, a language focus to things. So we do a lot of supplemental work. So whenever we collaborate with those programs, we can bring the writing, the linguistic focus to things, as well as elements of cross-culturalism. I'm just going to try to use that as much as buzzword. I can.
Right?
Awesome. That's super cool. Yeah. I think that it's really important, too, with CMWR, that there is kind of a focus on the writing part, which is, it's a little bit, and the things that we do at the Writing Center with international writers is a little bit different than just translating things like from one language to another. We kind of have to work with both languages, like native speakers of each, and kind of show how we can help them learn about how to use our language in the way that they already know how to use theirs.
Ooh,
right.
Which I think is pretty cool.
It is
cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
sounded very cool.
It's really, I mean, yeah, it is very different. And I think a lot of times too, there's like at the very root of it, it's also very similar too. And like the way that, no matter who you're working with or what we're doing in the Writing Center, our goal is just to help them better understand how they're using language in a certain context. And maybe it's a second, a third, a fourth, fifth, et cetera, language. Maybe it's for a class or a job interview. Regardless of that, it's all about like that specific context and the specific exigence or call to writing that they're tasked with. And so, yeah, it's different in how you approach working with that, which I guess comes pretty obvious with cross-cultural communication. There's a lot of other added elements to consider. So
yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And stepping outside of
Gina.
And stepping outside of your own element too, and being able to like understand things that are different from you, very essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Some of my favorite things about appointments with writers from different countries is how much I end up learning about their culture, even though I'm technically the one who's in the like instructor type position. You learn so much, and that's the kind of like mutual benefit that you get from those kind of appointments.
It also makes you think about writing and language in new ways all the time, just because of like talking to writers about ways that they came to understand certain things and how that happened. Super, you know, you just you both kind of, it's super collaborative and everyone learns from it.
Let's talk about which of our core values this relates to at the Aquaball, the University Center for Writing Based Learning.
Nice,
we have,
How can we select just one?
Exactly. you know, out of our six core values, collaboration, diversity, reflection, respect, revision, and transparency, I think for the most part, it reflects with collaboration, diversity, and respect.
I would say the same.
You're collaborating with other people, learning about diverse cultures, things that are different from your own. And it takes respect to want to and accept those things that aren't different from yourself and respect other people from other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just wanted to connect that.
Well done. And respect from them in the way that language is taught and perceived here, because also it's different across countries by like a vast margin. So it takes like some, you know, it's like a meet me halfway type thing. A lot of the time, which is what makes it different from translation, I feel, because with translation and like thinking about translation, it's like a complete conversion of like one language to the other. And it's like you try and maintain certain aspects of language that are specific to one culture, but at the same time it is like, you know, literally like carbon copy, you hope, you know. So it's interesting to compare and contrast the two, for me at least.
Let's talk about translation a little.
Kristen, take it away. Give us a little I guess what I'd kind of like to hear is so all the stuff that we just talked about, how is translation different than that? Like, what is it? What do you do? What is kind of the task that a person who's translating something
Do you have experience with translation?
I don't, but I have experience reading about translation and those who are really committed to kind of learning and understanding it. I think like it's interesting to think about what Mark does and engages all the time with kind of anti-translation, where you don't, it's like you're not,
we're not trying to completely change it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
true. Just learn more about it.
Well, it is a lot different, and especially like in my role as a teacher, when I'm teaching English language classes, so students who are still like in a context that they are learning the language, that can be a tricky thing, because while there's a lot of research that shows doing certain stages of the writing process in your native language, whether it's brainstorming, invention type activities, even some elements of drafting, while that can be really helpful to get your ideas going, there's also a lot of research that shows translating doesn't always work the best.
Okay.
And so like if you were to write a paper in, say your first language is English, you write the paper in English, and then for your Spanish class, you're trying to translate it into Spanish. First off, the learning doesn't really happen because you're just translating word for word. But it's also challenging too because, I mean, all languages, even like with similar roots, have very different structures, very different ways of forming the sentences, forming or even using words. Like if you look at English, British English versus American English, there's differences in how adverbs, adjectives are used, certain words.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so even that can be like just the subtleties can make that act somewhat challenging.
Right. Yeah.
But then like translating for like the actual purpose of translating for like official documents
manuscripts
for like books. I think that takes such a skill because it you have is. To think like, here's what they're saying. Here's how I can say it in this language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And hope to retain like the certain tone and like attitude that it may convey in a certain language that is made up of words that describe things that we don't even, you know, emphasize or understand.
Sorry.
In the same way. Please go.
Yeah. That's what I've kind of noticed in like engaging with people who speak a lot of languages, because I've made friends who now speak up to like 8 languages and who study languages. It's nuts. But something that I think is so cool is how many words different languages have that other languages do not have.
Yeah.
So like there are words in, say, German especially, that like are used for very specific things, and English like doesn't have words for them. So, for example, one of my favorite authors is called Walter Moers. He's German, but because he's German, he writes all his books in German. So I have to wait for them to be translated. Which is interesting, but I've always kind of wondered like how close these translations are to the actual German things, like knowing now how much of the German vocabulary we don't have words for.
We were talking about this the other day when we were planning about how different languages, you know, contain words that like mean something complete, like not specific nouns, but whole concepts in a word, which I think is interesting and very different from English, considering that English is like primarily, I think you use the word, Emily, like categorized, in that every word means like kind of a singular thing, unless of course it's a plural word, but like, but it's, you know, one object. It's not really like an overall state of being or whatever. But I know, like, in a lot of, like Japanese has a lot of words that, like, one word just means, like, a whole lot of things in that one word, which is so interesting. But when you're translating, I think that there is a certain responsibility to take these words that we don't really have access to in the English language and try to be true to them without westernizing, like, this beautiful concept of like,
I mean, yeah, look at the Bible,
like the Bible,
tons
right?
of arguments about which translation is the one
that's true. Oh,
that's the
King
skill.
James versus the showing all my
your Bible knowledge.
Like, but there's a lot of arguments as to which is the correct version because a lot of it comes to interpretation,
right?
And I think even like recently, I remember reading about the Catholic Church doing a like reinterpretation and retranslation.
So
even like mass, they use different.
That's true.
Like they change their mass.
Yeah.
So like different terms and different words. So like instead of saying like peace be with you, they say
with
like,
your spirit.
Yes, or something like that.
And it messed everyone up.
It's like this is more connected to the actual text.
I definitely actually have experienced that, like growing up going to Catholic mass, just noticing like subtleties in like the call and response prayer, and I wonder if it's called that.
Call
and response prayer.
It's call and response.
That's a great.
So I mean, I'll be like, oh, they like switched it up a bit on me, and then I'm just like. All right,
because you're saying
it's a little different.
When you're saying it in a group, I feel like always so embarrassed when my family's really Catholic, and I remember going to church when they made that switch. Because it was my first time going to church in a while, my family's first time going in a while, and like we were all just standing there so ready to be like, and also with you. And it just didn't work out, and we were all like looking, we panicked.
Are we in a Catholic church?
We were just like, oh my god. It's stressful.
It's really
and
good.
It can be stressful not knowing correct translations or
well, yeah, and as a reader, you put a lot of you like
faith.
Inadvertently put a lot of faith in the translator and like
absolutely
assume that they're the right translator or
they're doing it right.
Exactly.
I mean, it's such a skill and accomplishment to have translated like important works into English and have your translation be the one that is, you know, frequented upon. Yeah. But yeah, it's also a lot of pressure because, like I said earlier, you want to maintain like whatever attitude is given off by the writer.
That's true.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah.
I think the Catholic Mass, though, is a great example of a point. Oh my gosh. Sorry. Early mornings. I think it's an example of an event that in contemporary society still uses like multiple languages in its in just what it does in its routine. And I myself am not Catholic, but I know a lot of people who are Catholic. And I think it's interesting that they use Latin. And so even if people, I'm not saying everyone who goes to Catholic Mass speaks Latin, but I think it's interesting that idea that in order to be a part of this community, you do have to have a little bit of knowledge of this language that is such a big history.
Yeah, I went to a really old school church growing up, and so there was a lot of like Latin and sometimes Italian. I remember singing hymns in like Italian. And they have the like thing out there for you, but you're just like, try your best at the pronunciation.
Oh, yeah.
However, like being able to code switch, I guess, like that a little bit, and understanding that each like different each thing is in a different language because it has weight and meaning.
Yeah, like there's a reason that they keep it that way.
And I think a lot of like reasons why there is so much Latin incorporated in that kind of thing is because it's so like old, you know, and like roots.
I love Latin. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Latin in the second half of our show. Because I think it is a perfect example of, it is an example of cross-culturism in language, because so many languages from different places come from Latin and used that language and adapted it in their own ways to create languages that we have now.
Super interesting. Yeah. When I started at DePaul, I was in the honors program, and I had a language requirement, and I remember when I was like coming into college, I was like, oh man, if I take Latin, it'll give me like a leg up in all my anatomy classes because all the parts of the body are just basically Latin words.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, should I take Latin? And then my friends would be like, it's a dead language. And I was like,
take it.
I know, it was a whole big complex for me.
But also, it does, I feel like if you knew Latin, learning.
It's the root of lots of words.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like English is a Germanic language, but it has a ton of Latin in it.
So
Spanish,
much
Italian,
of stuff in English.
A lot of Latin, so like I feel like it gives you like
it would,
not only in your science backgrounds, but then also like for understanding like the actual like just English a lot of the roots and things in English, but then also if you learned other languages
maybe it would like give me a sort of affinity to pick up certain other languages if I like already had a good understanding of Latin.
It's living on in other languages and
people love to say it's dead though.
It's not. It's used. Well, on that note, I think it would be a good time for our first song break. And for this week, we've decided to use some songs that incorporate other languages but are still popular. So the first song that we've chosen is Volare by Dean Martin.
Volare. Oh. Cantare, oh, 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 let's fly way up to the clouds, away from the maddening crowds. We can sing in the glow of a star that I know of, where lovers enjoy peace of mind. Let us leave the confusion and all disillusion behind. Just like birds of a feather, a rainbow together we'll find. Volare, oh, e cantare, oh, oh, oh. No wonder my happy heart sings, your love has given me wings.
Penso che io sogno così non ritorni mai più. Mi dipinge con le mani e la faccia di blu. Poi d'improvviso tenido dal veretto rapito e incominciavo a volare nel cielo infinito. Volare, oh, oh, e cantare, oh, oh, nel blu, dipinto di blu, e chi dice di stare lassù, e volavo, volavo, venice un'alte del sole con coro più su. Mentre molto pian piano sparivo lontano laggiù, una musica dolce suonare soltanto per me. Volare, oh, oh, e cantare, oh, oh. No wonder my happy heart sings, your love has given me wings. Nel blu, dipinto di blu, venite di stare lassù. Nel blu, dipinto di blu.
And we're back. That was Volare by Dean Martin. Beautiful, beautiful song.
Great song.
Yeah.
Italian. And I speak.
Yes. Gia does speak Italian.
Oh, Gia, I didn't know that about you.
I do. I speak Gia. Italian. I learned Italian here at DePaul.
Ciao, mi chiamo Gianna. E sono una radio host.
Yes.
That's gorgeous. You learned it here at
DePaul? I'm going to make some conversation partner appointments with you now.
Really? Please don't.
Speaking of conversation.
I'm not great in Italian.
Speaking of conversation partner appointments.
Speak of them.
I think it would be a nice idea to kind of chat about all of our experiences and appointments with multilingual writers in the Akubo. Especially because shout out to all of our new tutors who have all opened up for their own appointments.
Woo.
But I've had a couple new tutors who have asked me just some advice about working with ESL writers or English second language writers. So would anybody like to kind of give some insight into their own experiences? Yeah. Gia, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks.
I really needed that.
Thank
it's
you.
Hard.
It's a tough job. Gia. So I actually wrote like a, I think it was an in-service proposal like 2 years ago about writing patterns in ELA writers.
Mm. Oh, cool.
Which is, or ELL writers, which is English Language Learner Writers.
There's so many. Can we pause? There's acronyms about.
There are.
Can you give us the acronyms?
Yeah. What is the best one you like to use?
The preferred nomenclature at the Equable.
Yeah.
So our the term we use is EAL, English as an Additional Language.
Oh.
I pushed for that change from ELL because the ELL is commonly used, but it just sometimes can seem a little condescending, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, focuses on, like, the not
the absence
the,
of
yeah,
English.
Yeah, exactly,
they're learning.
Of the
it cuts out multiculturalism and cross-culturalism.
Exactly.
Good job.
Additional, like, English as an additional, it likely is not a second language. It's oftentimes a third or a fourth or a fifth.
Oh, that's a good point too.
Yeah, it's more additive in nature, so it supports the idea that English is adding to their language repertoire, not subtracting one of their other languages and replacing
that's
it.
That's awesome. So
this is
EAL,
like
that's
of language
what
and what language does and how it operates. So it's cool.
Yes. All right, go ahead. Continue, Gia. Talk about our EAL experience.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Really quick also, I think that's interesting that United States is one of the few countries that all of our citizens don't know, you know, more than one or two languages.
That's very weird.
A lot of European countries, they're like, yep, we know four languages, and that's the norm. And I can't imagine. I barely know two.
Yeah.
I know one.
Yeah, there you go.
It's my mother tongue.
mother tongue.
That's what it is. And growing up, I took Spanish long time.
Everyone does.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I took Latin.
Okay.
Oh.
I took Spanish in high school.
Don't you know it's dead?
Yeah, come on.
Did anyone tell you?
It's all dead.
It's all dead.
I'm telling you.
But yeah,
Spanish,
zombie language.
I could have been more motivated, I think, probably. But also, like, in middle school, we took it for, like, a third of the year, three times, mm-hmm. once every year.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of an ineffective system. Yeah. So, yeah. like, my foundation was weak, really weak,
yeah.
going into high school. So.
Yeah. My middle school had us learn, we did, like, we were on quarters, too, which is weird.
Oh, that is weird.
Yeah.
What the heck?
But my middle school had us do a quarter of French, a quarter of Spanish, and then a quarter of German, which was rough.
So, wow.
Why? Yeah, geez.
So you would do all three, and then when you went to high school, you got to choose which one you wanted to do. We also offered Latin, but not in middle school.
Oh.
Actually, you know what? No, I did take it in middle school. Excuse me.
That's crazy.
But I was not good at it.
I think that's amazing.
A lot of languages all at once.
Yeah, they really wanted to instill, like, worldliness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a weird little liberal town.
There's that fun thing that Chomsky talks about, the language acquisition device, and how it's, like, really firing in your brain when you're much younger. So mm-hmm. that's why they try and get you started early. But, like, middle school is late for that.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about early.
I went to a preschool, where they taught us, beginning Spanish and French.
Mm-hmm. When they started a program at my elementary school where it's, like, I think it's called, it used to be called just like the bilingual program where kindergartners were like mixed. It was like mixed languages in kindergarten.
Immersion courses started a lot, or immersion education started a lot in like the 90s.
It seems really good.
It's really awesome because like
more people should do it.
There's this really cool documentary that followed students from like kindergarten through, I don't know, junior high school at some point. And like by the time they got to junior high school, they were like fluent. And
that's awesome.
So like one or two, like in like kindergarten, they would just one period a day, they would walk into this room and the instructor would only talk in Spanish, French, Mandarin, whatever language they were learning, and like no English ever used. So it was just straight immersion. And then by the time they high school, they were like
extremely fluent.
Extremely fluent. Like
just comfortable.
Native level fluent. And it was
Having bilingual children is like not that hard if you yourself are a bilingual person.
Yeah, right.
You just have to speak the language and they will learn.
Mm.
But anyway,
that LAD.
We tangent.
Oh yeah.
As all academics do.
Yeah, it's fine. My work with EAL students, has been pretty extensive. I found that there are a lot of patterns that distinguish like other languages from English. Like when I'm working with someone who like may speak like their native language is like Mandarin, usually I'm gonna see that there aren't a lot of like verb tensings or a lot of like article uses, like the, because that's not really a common like trope.
Interesting.
Is trope the right word?
I would say maybe it's not characteristic like a grammar, of the language.
Grammar characteristic of the language. So like what you were talking about earlier, when you learn a new language, there are like whole different grammar rules that you need to learn. Like when I learned Italian, it was like this whole different thing where like everything, and this is very true for Romance languages, but like everything is gendered. Mm-hmm. Everything has an article regardless of whether you need it or not.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have like, there's six tenses of verbs.
Oh yeah. That's the same with Latin.
Yeah. And there's like very specific ones that mean the same thing, but do not sound the same.
Kristen, do you have any interesting experiences from your work with EAL writers at Thoughtable?
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
I had like a writer last year who would frequent, like probably, I guess once a week, and we were working on an ongoing project, but basically at the end of every appointment, he spoke good English. He had been learning for a long time.
Good English.
He spoke English.
I was waiting for it.
Speak English.
Anyways, at the end of all of our appointments, maybe like the last 20 minutes, we would go over this Google Doc that he had come up with that was just like filled up with words that he had come across, and he would ask me, you know, what do these mean for 20 minutes? And it was like so extensive. And the words were like, I mean, yeah, they were all completely different. And they were mostly nouns or adjectives.
Yeah.
He would just ask me like, what is this? I heard this. Like, how is it used? And I would have to like be like,
Yeah.
It's like this. It's Love used that. Weirdly, even though yeah. maybe it could be used like this.
It's weird to think of your own language mm-hmm. when you're so used to just mm-hmm. using it for granted.
When somebody asks me to explain something that, like, for example, in English, we don't have a word for, like, to explain mm-hmm. why this is, I have a hard time a lot of times because I find that I get a lot of conversation partner appointments, mm-hmm. which is something I love. We offer them at the Writing Center for EAL writers, and it entails really just coming in and having some talking points and just having a conversation. It doesn't have to be about a piece of writing or anything like that.
Just chatting.
You just chat, and they're all usually very different. I've had a couple that like will come in every week, and sometimes people will bring things to talk about, sometimes they won't, but it's always really nice to kind of just sit and teach them those rules that like you really necessarily wouldn't learn in a classroom, like slang.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People ask me about slang all the time. Yeah. I had someone ask me before about, they were very confused because Starbucks specifically uses different words for the sizes.
Oh, yeah.
So
and
they were
different languages.
Which, yeah,
and
different are all three different languages.
Yes. So actually, someone asked me one
yeah,
time, like,
venti is 20 in Italian.
Yeah.
And then what?
Because it says 20 ounce
in Spanish,
but that's the smallest one.
Tall.
Right?
Tall is the small one.
English.
Why are they foolish?
Isn't that so interesting though? How like these foolish? Things that we experience every day. So like we experience, if we go to Starbucks, like all these languages, and
so
we don't
much.
Think twice about it. But for someone who doesn't speak English, where it's like, not what? A norm to have like these things around. Mm-hmm. It's confusing.
Or even someone who does speak English.
True.
I think this is like exactly. This goes back to like beyond even like the actual language in terms of like English, Mandarin, yeah. Spanish, but like the actual language used in a discourse. Like I remember the first time my mother went to a Starbucks.
Yeah.
She's not listening, so I don't have to worry about calling her out on the radio. The first time she went to a Starbucks, she had no idea what was going on because she had no idea like the difference between I still don't really all the different latte type drinks.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Like
yeah.
The other whatever drinks or the sizes. And so like when you're new to any
yeah.
discourse Macchiato. Community mm-hmm. and like group of people that use
Coffee
language in
one.
A certain. Yeah, exactly. People who use language in a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. And so you have to like navigate that. And so especially mm-hmm. for like international students uh-huh. who are coming to a very new culture that's using language in a different way and using mm-hmm. a different language in a different way, that can be especially challenging.
Yeah, definitely.
Nothing if not immersive.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
Starbucks as well.
At yeah. a Starbucks.
That's immersive Starbucks. Language learning.
Cortado.
So what you're saying Macchiato. Is Starbucks is the peak of cross-culturalism.
It really is.
There's a lot
of
different
language. There's yeah. a ton of different language. And there's like Italian type yeah. drinks. There's, which, I mean,
Macchiato,
Italians.
Cappuccino.
If you go to the
Italians
Reserve
did
Bar, they have
we
like
a
bunch
they,
of
really
international.
Espresso.
Oh yeah,
espresso macchiato.
There's a good go. Episode of The Sopranos where one of the episodes gets upset when he's at a coffee bar and he's like them reaping all the gifts of like what we perfected. Like,
none of these dudes are even Italian. Yeah.
I love that.
Well,
Pauly, exactly, Mark. Pauly. Exactly.
But yeah, what one? I think to some extent, a lot of what you were all saying is comes back to language transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So like when speaking in a second, third, or fourth language, one of your additional languages,
yeah. mm-hmm.
there's often times where your first language, your L1 slips in odd ways.
Yeah.
And so like Gia, what you were saying, like you can notice common patterns with certain writers.
Yeah.
So like a Chinese student very likely to have a lot of verb issues because
yeah.
Chinese does not, Mandarin does not conjugate verbs mm-hmm. for singular, plural, but
yeah.
also for tenses.
Yeah.
Like you get the tense from the context of the sentence. And so mm-hmm. that can be really challenging. I mean, everyone who's learning English has problems with pronouns.
English is a weird language, dude.
English is the worst.
Yeah. And I mean, especially if you think of cross-culturalism,
mm-hmm.
like English is a Germanic language, but it has so
many. A lot of Latin roots.
A lot of Latin
roots. A lot of romance words.
But a ton of other, like it draws from a ton of other languages. And
yeah.
it's
yeah.
probably one of the more dynamic languages because mm-hmm. It's spread around the world so drastically different
yeah.
than other
yeah,
languages. And so it is a very mm-hmm. a very tricky language
and
to
we
learn.
Think about I think about like the United States as a very like I mean I think there are a lot of people who wish it was more homogenized, but a very like cross-cultural
oh,
place
yeah.
because I mean, long ago. We are made up of, like, immigrants, except for Native Americans.
The very newest.
You know, and that's why we have, you know, coffee places that use Italian words, because Starbucks, I don't quote me on this, I feel like it's probably started by an Italian family, and if that's not true, then whatever.
I know it started in Seattle.
Yeah.
Ooh. I went to the original ones.
Oh, wow. Was it but good?
Nothing special.
It was just a Starbucks.
Yeah. Pretty much a regular
just Starbucks.
I guess it's a good idea, right?
But, you know, like, Italians brought over, like, Italian coffee. And then we have, like, you know, there's a lot more, like, Mexican and, like, Latino, like, immigrants who are coming to the United States. So I see a lot more, like, Latino, like, influence in, like, when I'm walking around. And, like, my boyfriend lives in, a predominantly Latino neighborhood. And so, like, we go to the grocery store. I usually, like, speak Spanish with the cashier and stuff. And so, like, just, I think about just, like, walking around in the world, like, being able to use language and, like, totally. Or if you aren't able to use language and how hard that is, and like, it's nice to live in a city because you have pockets of, like, different people.
And I love my neighborhood for that exact reason.
Yeah.
Going back to cross-culturalism.
Cross-culturalism.
I live in Albany Park, which is, I think, and definitely within Chicago, but then even within the United States, it has one of the highest, like, third highest percentage of foreign-born residents.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a very, very diverse neighborhood. A lot of Mexican, Puerto Rican, Guatemalan, from different areas of Southeast Asia.
Andersonville has a really great, like, a very large Vietnamese population.
And it's, yeah, it's just, like, really great to have all of that culture, because there's, like, just so much more out there in terms of perspective. And, like, that's actually one of DePaul's, like, learning outcomes, goal four of DePaul's learning goals or whatever.
DePaul.
But, like, it's for intercultural and global understanding. And, like, DePaul being a liberal studies university, it values liberal studies in terms of getting a lot of different perspectives on knowledge. But then also, as related to that goal I just mentioned, it also says, like, yes, we should have other cultural perspectives as well. We shouldn't just have this monolithic, like, monocultural perspective of here's how the U.S. does this, but rather here's how
very westernized.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, so, that would never happen. We're in Chicago, so they're just like, go be in Chicago, like, let Chicago help you learn, and it's a big city, and do that. But yeah, also, like, I mean, why I chose it was the liberal arts portion of it, plus, like, the city environment equals, you know, like, just a good understanding,
Chicago, like, a good is baseline a understanding. City.
It's a global study. That's helped someone with an essay. It might have been for your class.
Really?
Oh,
That was on, like, how Chicago is a city, like, of immigrants, or, like, a global city or whatever.
That's something that
might be a lie also.
That might be a lie. That's something that I have come to love so much about Chicago growing up here, is that I realize in some of my friends who maybe grew up in a more, I like the way you use homogenized kind of society or community, where there were more people that were like them than that weren't. Whereas growing up, like, my parents have friends of lots of different cultures, lots of different ethnicities. And so I always grew up around people of just all different kinds of cultures, which made, as I was growing up, there was never that kind of fear. Yeah. That fear that some people have when embracing a new culture, encountering something that they don't know. And I think spending a lot of time in a place like Chicago, where it's not so much like, I'm going to go out and learn about Greek culture today.
Yeah.
But you just encounter it walking around. Like, if you walk around in Greek town. And I love that about this city. Like, it helps you. Helps you learn.
I appreciate that we're able to use cross-culturalism here at DePaul in, like, things that we learn.
Oh, yeah.
Emily, I know that you're an English major.
I am.
Can you tell us a little bit about poetry that you've encountered?
Oh, sure. One of the kind of biggest examples is Virgil's Aeneid, which is very, very widely taught all over the place. And I actually encountered it in high school.
Oh, just kidding.
But
the same deaf.
But it's the same. I've actually studied it at DePaul as well, in one of my poetry classes.
Oh, yeah.
But I first encountered it in high school, where I translated it from Latin to English. So the first time I ever read, That was our
class. Like, actually really know Latin?
Not okay. Well. Okay. Not reading, any better.
Reading Virgil in English is
hard enough.
Yeah. It's honestly, wow. That's what our school did. Our Latin program was really cool. It was kind of funny because our Spanish classes would have like 36 kids per class. Yeah. Our Latin class had one class of seven. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was
Latin
interesting.
Kids.
But the Aeneid. So I encountered it when I was doing this translation for class. We did it in class. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was so interesting that this story, and like reading it through the other language and then later analyzing it in like a college level poetry class in English, mm-hmm. I found that it was interesting that like things that I noticed were different from when I remembered translating it, like different little things. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was so cool that something that I learned in high school in a totally different language, I encountered again, like years later in a totally different language and context. And that I think can be said,
surprise.
That I think can be said about a lot of writers that are from different times in history. A lot of what we read is translated.
Yeah.
Whether we know it or not. Yeah. And then a lot of that goes on to be used in like pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. For example, last fun bit about the Aeneid. If you're a theater person, there's a musical called Spring Awakening. And I have to plug Spring Awakening, I'm sorry. There's a musical called Spring Awakening, and there one of the songs is the opening lines of the Aeneid in Latin. And it sets up like a very important plot point, but you don't really know because it's in Latin. So it's like a very interesting way of like presenting this illusion without explicitly being like, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Also, thinking about kind of all that, we're going to do our last song break. Gia, do you want to explain this tune? Because I know you found it for us.
Yeah. So this is Come On Home by the Lijadu sisters, who are identical twins from Nigeria.
Amazing.
I think the song is from, I want to say it's like 70s, 80s.
Interesting.
But anyways, this is Come On Home.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
And we're back. That was Come On Home by the, you be saying it?
La Jadu Sisters.
Wonderful. Thank you, Gia. And so now to wrap up our show for today, we're going to be doing What You Readin'. Gia, do you want to start us off? Tell us what you're reading.
Yeah. Gia, what you reading?
Thanks. So I just finished listening to Anthony Bourdain's.
Honest.
I know. Well, you called me out yesterday.
That
so
was
I
yesterday,
have to
though.
Don't want to get called out.
I was like,
air,
I just,
sure.
I was like, I finished reading never. Anthony Bourdain's book, and Kristen was like, you listen to an audiobook. It's not the same. I'm busy, Kristen. I'm
love
sorry.
We're ruthless.
I just finished listening to Anthony Bourdain's audiobook, Kitchen Confidential, which he himself narrates. And it's really great.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
he's a great actor.
He's amazing. His like voice control is incredible. But I did bring a book that I think I'm going to reread. I read it for one of my honors English courses sophomore year. It's called The Namesake. It's by Jhumpa Lahiri. It was the winner of a... She's the winner of the Pulitzer Prize. So
nice.
That's wild.
Awesome.
But the book is basically just memoir fiction. It's like kind of her story, but placed in a different character. And it's about immigrant family from Calcutta, India, who come, and it's talking about like your name and how it like means something and how it like introduces you. Because the main character's name is Gogol, which is like a Calcuttan like traditional name, but it's like very common in India apparently. Mm-hmm. But like obviously in the United States, they come in the 80s, and it's like people are like, whoa, that's weird. And he feels weird as like this immigrant child, and it's about just like finding identity in as like an immigrant in a new country.
Very wow. cool.
But still connecting with your
cross-culturalism. Amazing.
Give it a read.
Cross-culturalism.
Kristen, are you reading anything cool?
I have not started anything. I just kind of got a copy of the Alice in Wonderland like series from co-host Emily. Emily, you knew what I was going to read.
I did.
It's Through the Looking Glass by Lewis Carroll.
Amazing.
So exciting.
A fave.
Yeah.
I am reading still the same as last week. I am still working through Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin, which is a very nice insight into American culture.
Definitely.
And it's a little concerning because a lot of the things in that book are scarily relevant today. And very problematic as well.
I'm sure it's a cool class and a cool
It lecture. Is an amazing class. It's the graduate seminar, Book and Media History with Marcy Denius. So if you're looking for a Book and Media History class, take it.
There you go.
Yeah, fun. Mark, are you reading anything fun?
Currently, I'm reading a lot of student papers.
Nice.
Sweet.
Which is teacher
always
life.
But actually, speaking of cross-culturalism and translation, I just this summer finished reading for the second time Italo Calvino's If on a Winter Night's Traveler, which
Very
was
cool.
originally written in Italian and then translated into English.
Beautiful.
We love that.
Cross culture.
I really just stopped talking there. I didn't really have a...
No, that's fine.
And I'm done now. So
done.
I've used all the words you booked me for, so...
That's
right. Incredible.
Well, we're coming to a close here. What a beautiful episode. Mark, if you want to give a little shout out, and you said you have a shout out to give.
I do. Do I?
Yeah, I don't know. Say you want to shout out to your mom.
Oh, hey, mom.
There you go.
I'll shout out to my mom. Hey, Steven and Zampardo, you guys are great. Let's all shout out to our moms.
I mentioned my mom on this show every week, and she's
Paula.
But she's going to be mad at me because I tell bad stories about her.
Yeah, we love you, Paula.
We love you, Paula. You're an inspiration.
Okay, well,
that's about it.
That's a beautiful shout-out, though. You're an inspiration.
Oh, thanks.
You're an inspiration.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on our talk about cross-culturalism.
Mm-hmm.
We are Kristen, G, and Emily, and we are Skrull. And thank you, Mark L., for coming on.
Thank you for having
and
me
and being our guest.
This was a great trip down memory lane.
And,
oh, so good.
If you're an international student or you would like just some help on writing or English or anything, feel free to come on down to the Writing Center located in both Lincoln Park and Loop campuses.
Oh, yeah.
Lincoln Park, SAC 212, Loop, Lewis 1600.
Amazing.
or you can email us at wcenter@depaul.edu.
Beautiful.
It's a nice place.
Thanks,
it's Jenna. A nice place. Of course. Shameless plug. Okay.
Have a great Friday, and this is Scrawl signing off.
Thank you for joining us.
I know it's gone.